Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, 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 it's Lean Keys, Real Talk 121. You know, we're going to get into a couple things here tonight. I got my boy Lee ready to go. You know, I've been trying to get the sound quality a little bit better, so that's a factor right there. I hope the sound quality is sounding better. We'll have to, you know, I'll have to check back and see how the audio sounds in this episode, you know, once we're done compared to the last episode, see if it got better, because I'm trying out something new tonight, you know, in terms of that, so hopefully that's there. And but yeah, we're definitely going to get right into it. We got a couple things. UFC 245 in Vegas is all wrapped up. We saw a lot of good fights on Saturday night, and we saw, you know, one champion, you know, we saw one title change hands and two champions keep their belts and a handful of other really good fights. So we're definitely going to jump into that. You know, Frankie Edgar's fighting in the main event this weekend. That's Lee's, like, that's probably Lee's top three favorite fighters. So we're definitely going to be talking about that. And, you know, the UFC just actually also raised the pay-per-view price again. I was just reading that today, that they put the price back to $64.99 for the UFC pay-per-views, and that's going to be starting with the McGregor Cowboy card in January. So that's going into effect soon, and we'll talk a bit about that, you know, if we have some time. And then I know there'll be some other things as well. There's always, you know, things that come up in the midst of our conversation. So anyways, let's get into it. I don't want to waste any more time. What's going on, Lee?
Oh man, chilling, man. Yeah, man, a lot going on. You know, I'm definitely shocked by this pay-per-view price hike. That was kind of a shocker to me, bro. But yeah, I think we'll get into that, man. I got a couple thoughts on that. But yeah, man. How are you, man? How your holidays going so far?
The holidays are going great. You know, I already finished my Christmas shopping, so that's, you know, pretty much, you know, already right there, 90% out of the way anyways. You know, I never get it done early, so I'm kind of shocked about that, to be honest. You know, I'm usually a guy who shops on Christmas Eve to get everything. So. But I got it done early this year, so I don't know. Maybe I'm evolving. I don't know what's happening right now. This is the change of my life right now. But, you know, it's going good. It's going good. I'm happy. I'm in the Christmas spirit, man.
That's what's up, man. That's always good to hear, bro.
Yeah, this is the time of year for it, you know? Spread love. That's what it's about. What about you?
Oh, man, I'm hoping. I'm praying. I got my fingers crossed, my toes crossed, that all the stuff I ordered gets here by Tuesday. I'm hoping everything gets here by Tuesday, because I did kind of wait kind of late in the game, because nothing really stuck out to me as far as getting gifts, but I found a couple, two, three things that I liked. I ordered them, and I paid for express shipping on one. The other one I didn't, because they wanted too much, so I emailed the company. And they said they would expedite my order, so hopefully everything will get here by Christmas Eve.
Yeah, I know. You know that. I know that process is a lot. You know, Christmas is different. It's a lot different for you than for me, because you got kids to buy for. That changed everything.
Well, you know, my kids are grown now, so you know, I really don't go shopping for them like that. But it's more on the lines of my wife and my grandkids. So, you know, I try to get them nice stuff, you know. But I really don't like going to the mall and doing all that craziness this time of the year, because, you know, people breaking in cars and doing all types of crazy stuff. So I try to do all my shopping online. Normally I'm a little bit more proactive, but this year I was more of a procrastinator.
Hey, it's all right. You know, I like to always say is, better late than never, you know.
Yeah, man. So what you want to talk about, man? What's the first thing you want to jump into tonight?
So, you know, I think we'll save the UFC pay-per-view price for later on, because we definitely want to get into, you know, Frankie's fight. We'll save that for we'll get into that shortly. But first, I think we should first and foremost recap UFC 245. I'm actually watching the post fight press conference right now. You know, I've seen Moraes speak. I've seen I just got done watching Max Holloway and Manny Bless on the stage. Man, Manny Bless is awesome, man. Manny Bless was up there, like, I don't know if they were eating cereal together or they were eating ice cream. I don't know if they were eating cake. But Manny Bless was up there, you know, at the post-fight press conference with Max Holloway and like father, like son, man. That looked awesome. Like, that image I got of that was, yo, one of the reporters was like, that's what it's all about. Like, that right there, what y'all are doing right now. And, yeah, I just had to just take a second to just point that out because I really loved that so much, seeing Manny Bless up there. And he wasn't upset or nothing that his dad lost, so I was really happy. And Max Holloway, always humble, so I saw him. I'm watching Nunes recap her fight with Durandamé right now, so I definitely have a lot of points to talk about, you know, from what was said in this conference. So I'm gonna want to shoot a lot of questions off you about that, and you definitely got to tell me about, you know, basically a lot of what happened on the prelims if you got to see it, because I actually didn't get to see the prelims. You know, we had we ordered the pay-per-view, but you know, I was at a friend was hosting a party. It wasn't my house, and you know, I was actually wasn't able to watch. They had the prelims on, but I was a bit distracted at that time. You know, we were playing card games and stuff like that, so I was kind of mingling. You know, a lot of people I didn't know, making new friends, stuff like that. So, you know, I didn't get to see the prelims, but I did start really watching closely when the main card started. You know, I couldn't miss out on that blockbuster main card that we were just gifted, you know, by the MMA gods with, you know, that stellar main card that we really just witnessed. So I had to, my eyes got glued to the TV as soon as the main card kicked off. I couldn't miss that. So, yeah, you got to let me know what happened in the prelims, man.
Yeah, man, the prelims. I'm trying to pull it up on my phone to get the card back up. But the prelims, I think Jeff Neal was awesome. He was awesome. He looked very good against Mike Perry, and like I said, Mike Perry, I really think he's super overrated. He doesn't have any defense. He's been mediocre in his last 10 fights, and Jeff Neal did what he did, man. He went in there, knocked him out in the first round within a minute and 30 seconds, and then Aldaya had a very, very, very good showing when she knocked out Caitlin Vieira in the first round. Aya Heinisch. Man, that was a good fight too, but he lost a unanimous decision against Akhmedov, who I thought looked very good in that fight, man. He looked very good and composed against Ian Heinisch. I thought Ian Heinisch would kind of run away with this fight, but to me it seemed like after he felt Akhmedov's power, it seems to me he became a little gun-shy, and you never really seen Ian Heinisch gun-shy into that fight. And the Mack Brown, Ben Saunders fight, Mack Brown looked totally awesome in that fight. His body looked good. He looked good. And Saunders, this had to be the coaching. The problem I had with Saunders was the coaching. Most of the first round he had Mike Brown locked into a triangle, basically the whole 5 minutes of the first round. So you know his legs were gassed at the end of that round. You can tell by the way he walked back to his corner. And lo and behold, he gets to his corner, and his corner says, yeah, we need to come out and establish kicks. I'm sitting there like, how is he supposed to establish kicks when he could barely walk to the corner? I thought his game plan should have been stay away, you know, feint, throw some jabs, get the feeling back and the blood flowing back in your legs, and then you press on in the second half of round two. And lo and behold, he got knocked out in round two. I thought that was bad coaching, but the prelims are actually pretty good fights. I know you was definitely happy about your girl Aldana, and I was definitely happy about Jeff Neal.
Yeah, you know, that was huge for me because I was actually sitting down and, you know, we, like I said, we were running some card games at the table, and I was just, you know, in the middle of a game, and my friend actually, like, launched out of his seat, and he was, like, going crazy. He's like, bro, he's like, your girl just knocked her out. She was getting dominated, like, the whole round, and then just knocked her out, like, at the end of the round, and he was going crazy about that. So that got me up out of my seat right there for a second. That really had me hype about that. You know, I when we made the predictions, I said that I thought she would win, but I thought it'd be a decision. But yeah, no, I wasn't expecting her to get a knockout win, so that was huge, man. I mean, and you gotta consider the fact that she just knocked out the number two contender in the division. So now, I want to say Aldana's like, she's like number like four. 14 maybe. I know she's not in the top 10. So she's definitely going to be plunging into the top 10 now. You know that. UFC is about to, she might even be in the top 5 now. You know, she might be, I don't know where, but that's definitely a huge win for her over the number 2 rank in her division. So that, she'll definitely be getting another big fight coming up after that win. Definitely. I'm happy about that.
Yeah, actually, they haven't updated the rankings yet, so I don't know where she's ranked at. But it was definitely an impressive win, beating the number two lady in the weight class, and she did it in convincing fashion. It was a nice knockout. Looked like she stuck to her game plan, and she didn't let the moment become too big for her.
Now, I want to ask you this. Do you think that Aldana's corner predicted that finish? Or do you think it was random? Like, you think they wanted to – do you think they went and they said, okay, go in there and let Vieira, you know, throw heavy shots for most of the first round, and then you go on the attack end of the first round or top of the second? You think that was their game plan, or that was just a flash knockout?
I think it was a flash knockout because nobody really wants their fighter to have that game plan, because if you get clipped, there's a chance you get finished. So I thought her game plan was to stay at distance, you know, be tactical. Engage and move. And I thought it was a smart game plan, and then I think the knockout was a flash knockout. But Aldana is ranked number 5 now. Aspen Ladd has moved up to number 2, and Caitlin Vieira has moved down to number 7.
Okay, yeah, so, she definitely made a jump in the rankings. Yeah, I want to say she was, like, lower, definitely lower, you know, between 10 and 15, Aldana was. So that's good. That's good. That's you know, sometimes.
She was ranked number 10 going into that fight.
Yeah, so I think sometimes, like, it kind of, with the way the rankings are, is like, and especially the way the matchmaking is a lot of times, when they have these fights, you know, my only concern about those kinds of fights where they have, like, you know, a potential championship contender, like Vieira could have fought for the title already, you know, being number 2. If they, you know, I bet you that was in the talks at some point. She probably, a lot of people said that she could be fighting for the title, but, you know, they have those fights. They don't have somebody else, so they might have to, the next person available might be the number 10. My only issue with those fights is that when you have these types of finishes, as much as I'm a fan of Aldana, because I'm trying to be objective here, because Lee has been pushing that agenda on me lately about being more objective. So I'm trying to be objective here with this. And my issue with it in this case is that you don't really know how legit Aldana is. Like, of course, as a fan, I think she is, but objectively, you don't know where her skill and her stand-up is really at, because where it was a flash knockout, and most people said she was losing the round. Can she really compete with top five competition, or was it really just kind of like a flash in the pan kind of thing, and maybe she can't compete at that level, but now it looks like she can't, and then now she's getting jumped into the top five, where she's probably only going to be fighting people within the top 10 at least, or if not a top five fight, and maybe she's not ready for it. So, you know, because
we
know
we've seen fight should be against Aspen Ladd. I think her next fight should be against Aspen Ladd, who's ranked number 2, and Jerron Domanemy is ranked number 1, and Holly Holm is number 3. I will probably try to match Ladd and Aldana up, because I don't know about Juliana Pena. Maybe they do Ladd versus Pena, but I would rather see Aldana versus Ladd being they two up and comers, and that way we can establish which one is for real, and see what both of them about. So that's the fight I would try to make, Aldana versus Ladd.
Yeah, and that's a tough one too, because it's like the way I was watching Aspen Ladd's last fight, and the way that she looked, you know, her ground, she looked really good on the mat. She pretty much dominated once she brought the fight to the mat in her last outing, and I really haven't seen Aldana really, you know, she's more into the boxing, and I don't know how she'll do or how she'll handle Aspen Ladd's, you know, offense if the fight were to go to the mat. So that's an interesting one. But then again, at the same time, you know, Aldana, I think, would probably have the edge in the stand-up. But, you know, that we'll see what happens. That's yet to be seen. I think we should probably transition right now. We'll jump right into the main card, because we want to get to some other things after the recap too. So I'm going to go to the first fight of the main card. I want to say was Jan and Faber. So Peter Jan and Uriah Faber. Now, in my opinion, even though Faber lost, I was very surprised and I was impressed. And I did predict Peter Jan. I think I said Peter Jan would finish him TKO in the second round, even though it was a third round knockout, but I wasn't too far off. I think you predicted a knockout for Jan as well. I was, though, surprised with the way Faber was moving, the way his body looked and the speed that he was moving at, even if it was just in the first two rounds. At 40 years old, I was really surprised by that. Now, he is a smaller guy, 135. These guys are a lot smaller, so it's different than being, like, you know, a DC fighting at 40 years old, you know, looking a bit more slow, or Damian Maia fighting at 40 years old, maybe, but I don't know. I was really impressed with the way Faber looked in the fight overall, even though he lost. What do you think about it?
I thought Uriah's only chance, yeah, he looked good. You know, he looked like he was ready. His body looked like he was ready. But I thought his only chance of winning that fight was he would have had to make it a ground battle, because we have never really seen Jan wrestle and grapple and fight off his back. And he just couldn't make it that type of fight. Jan showed great hand speed and power. He knocked Faber down countless times. I thought the fight could have been stopped at the end of the second round, somewhere around there, where Jan had him really hurt, which he ended up getting him up out of there in the third round. A lot of these young guys nowadays that's coming up, young guys and ladies, they have power in their hands. Whereas in the old days, you know, you had to set up knockouts. You had to set them up by, you know, using ground and pound, you know, using little tricks in the cage as far as fakes and stuff like that. Nowadays, these UFC fighters, man, they can knock you out with one punch. Aldana, for example. Peter Yan, oh my God, man. He was, I think he knocked Uriah out with a leg kick, but he set that leg kick up with the punches. So I like Peter Yan. I like the way he looked. I like that he didn't let the spotlight wasn't too big for him, and the caliber of opponent didn't shake him. And a little side note was, I don't know whether or not you saw the video, backstage of Cody Garbrandt trash-talking Peter Yan. So I'm thinking that if Yan doesn't get a title shot, which I don't think he's going to get, I think the UFC might try to make Garbrandt versus Yan after the Garbrandt of Sunstyle fight that's coming up. But we'll see what happens, man. But that was very interesting that that happened backstage after the fight. And kudos to Peter Yan for outstanding performance against the wily vet Uriah Faber.
And, I mean, yeah, I don't really know what happened. Just the way it looked in the video, I thought Yan really approached Garbrandt, but I don't really know what happened. But, yeah, I'm sure the, you know, Dana White, he loves that. You know, he's definitely loving that, because one thing that Dana White and that I love about Dana White and that a lot of people dislike Dana White for, which I don't honestly understand, is he makes the fights that fans want to see. And I don't understand why I see so much of this narrative of that makes him like a bad businessman, or like, he shouldn't, like, how is he the president of the UFC when he makes fights that people want to see? So I don't really understand that, but I'm sure that he loves that back and forth, and that if Cody can get past a Sunsal, then he will definitely leap into making that fight, and you'll see Yan get a, you know, they'll be getting contracts for that fight. Maybe they can do that on the big you know, the big March, April card, or maybe the Khabib Ferguson card. Maybe they could set that up for that one on the main card. I could see that happening. So we'll see what happens.
Well, I don't know. I know the Sunside fight and the Sunside Garbrandt fight was signed over the weekend. I don't remember when it's taking place. But back to your point about Dana White, I think some people question Dana's matchmaking when he ignores the rankings. Because, you know what, I'm going to let you go into the next fight, and then I'll make my point.
Okay. Yeah, we can jump back to that. But, yeah, the next thing that I want to say was, you know, Aldo. We got to talk about Aldo and Marlon Morris, and that, you know, I was just got finished watching Morris's, you know, his portion of the post-fight press conference. And, you know, one of the things that he said about Aldo when the reporters asked him was that Aldo basically just keeps coming forward and does nothing. Yeah, he said Aldo keeps coming forward and does nothing. So it was, you know, he was saying it was kind of like easy for him to, you know, because they asked, did the fight go the way that you thought it was? And, you know, was Aldo the way you expected him? Did he fight the way you expected him to? And he said, yeah, he more or less said Aldo's predictable. So did you think that Aldo fought, you know, his usual, fought in his usual way? Or did you think he was doing things differently?
Normally, I don't cuss on this show, but Marlon Moraes is full of shit, man. Marlon Moraes lost that fight, dog. Aldo was more aggressive in that fight. I don't see what the judges saw. I think one of the judges scored it 30-27. I don't know how the judge scored it that way. I thought Aldo definitely won round two. and definitely won round three. I missed portions of round one, but the people that was over here watching the fight, they said round one could have went either way. So Marlon Moraes really didn't do anything that was out of this world spectacular in this fight. And to be honest, it looked like he gassed a little bit in the middle of the second round going into the third round, like he did against Cejudo. So I think Aldo put on a hell of a performance, even though his body didn't look good to me. I thought Aldo won the fight. But the point I was about to make about Dana White, you know, and what you said about people, him giving people fights they want, is after the Aldo Moraes fight, he said he got a call from Henry Cejudo, and Cejudo says he wants to fight Aldo. And Dana White said, that fight excites me. And I fell back and I was like, I could have sworn Aljamain Sterling was the number one contender for the bantamweight belt. And Dana White said that after after Sterling beat Munoz. So why are we trying to make Cejudo versus Aldo? So I think sometimes people don't like his matchmaking when he tends to ignore the rankings when it comes to championship fights. If Aldo was to jump Aljo, I think I would be up in arms about that, because first of all, Aldo did take the loss, even though many people felt he won. And Aljo did everything he was asked to do by beating every guy in front of him and moving up in the ranks. So I think that's where a lot of controversy comes when it comes to Dana White and the matchmaking, when he ignores the ranking sometimes.
So, yeah, I've actually had to mute a couple people on Twitter lately just because the hot takes are just getting a little bit too much for me. These days, I really pick and choose, like, the content that I want to read. And it's instead of me, you know, disagreeing and having to spend my energy there, I'd rather just not have seen it in the first place. So therefore, I have muted a few accounts because there's a lot of people that just have these wild accusations to make, and it's too much for me. You know, in 2019, especially going into 2020, I can't be reading, you know, fake news on MMA Twitter. So we're just gonna, that, you know, with, you know, Dana White wanting to make fights that fans want, I understand about, in that case, that Aljamain Sterling was already the number one contender, and I thought that Aljo was right there for the title when he beat Jimmy Rivera. And then Pedro Munhoz fought Cody Garbrandt and knocked him out. Then all the fans were saying that Munhoz should get the next shot. So the fans actually were trying to make Munhoz jump Aljo before Dana White was. The fans were calling for – but see, that's the way that fans are, though, is that while Dana White is doing it, the fans are also doing it, because that's a perfect example right there. So many people I saw when – because they get caught in the hype of the moment and big knockouts. They want to see the fighters fight for the title, the people who have those big moments. And when you compare the two fights, Aljo, he beat Jimmy Rivera clearly. And then, you know, Munhoz gets a knockout over Garbrandt, who's been getting knocked out a lot lately. And then the fans say he should fight for the title. So the fans basically tried to make Aldo get jumped for the title before Dana White did. So I just want to put that there. But at the same time, I agree that what you're saying is that Aldo should not jump Sterling for the belt, because Sterling then went and beat the guy who the fans wanted, Munhoz. So then he beat Munhoz. I forget if he finished Munhoz or if he just put on a striking clinic. I really forget, but he dominated the fight. He looked dominant. I don't remember how he looked dominant, but he did. And he should already be there, so I don't know why there's any talk of anything else. Him versus Munhoz, this is why sometimes I like the interim belt, because they should have been an interim title fight, so he should have been waiting as the interim champion for Cejudo to come back. Then you could talk about Aldo later, because I definitely think Aldo has a case to have beaten Moraes, too. So that's how I feel about that.
Yeah, I mean, I would just feel bad if Aljo didn't get his shot, man. Because after he lost to Marlon Moraes, I think it was, he did everything, man. He fought everybody they put in front of him, and he basically dominated everybody they put in front of him. And he earned his spot in the rankings, man. I just don't think a returning Jose Aldo deserves a shot at Cejudo. And I think Cejudo is always looking to fight these quote-unquote returning veterans instead of fighting these up-and-coming guys. Like, he called out Faber. He called out Frankie. Now he's calling out Aldo. But he's not calling out Benavidez. He ain't calling out Aljo. He ain't calling out Petrojan. I mean, come on, bro. So, I don't know, man. We'll see what Dana does with the bantamweight belt. I think I wouldn't mind saying Petrojan versus Aljamain Sterling for the interim belt, and a winner gets the return of Cejudo. I wouldn't mind that. I don't think Cejudo is going to fight at 125 again. So I think if he doesn't defend that next, the 125 belt next, he should vacate it. I think he should be stripped from him, not vacate it, strip him.
Actually, and I have to gut you up because I have to say this before I forget. Now, this is what I'm about to say. This is a fact. This is a fact. You know, in my own, this is my own fact. I'm not saying this. I don't know if they got the $50,000, you know, for fight of the night bonus. But you just reminded me about something with the flyweights. Now, there was a flyweight fight that I did receive. I don't remember at what point in the night it was, but I did see it. And that was my favorite fight of the whole UFC 245. I'm trying to think who it was.
I'm looking it up now.
It was Marino and somebody else. That was my favorite fight of the whole event. Those guys were swinging. They were swinging, man, and it wasn't like they were standing and banging, trying to take each other's head off for the three rounds, but it wasn't just that. It was like Marino looked so good. And they both, like, in the first round, I was so impressed with, like, the way they were moving. Like, it was so – both guys looked so energized, and they were, like – they looked like they were having fun with it. But it was, like, a – they were competitive at the same time. Like, they were trying to take each other's head off, but they were having fun doing it. And, like, you could just really feel it when you were watching it. Like, I was so entertained by it, and I was so impressed. And it was, like, oh, my God. Like, that was such a fun fight. And you could see the other guys started to fade, like, halfway through the second round. And then, like, the majority of the third round, you knew, like, the other guy, like, was really gassed. And then Moreno really took over the fight in the third round. The guy was just trying to survive. But I want to say they were, like, number six and number seven in the flyweight division. And, man, that was my favorite fight of the event.
Moreno was great.
Who was the other guy?
Power France.
Yeah, man, that fight was my favorite fight of the whole event. That was my favorite back and forth, and that just made me have to say, everybody saying the flyweights are boring, but then you get fights like that, and you have to bite your tongue and just not say it that next time. Can't say the flyweights are boring when they're putting on fight of the night potential fights like that. And that's what I'm talking about, that right there. So Moreno needs a big fight next. And that other guy he fought in France needs a big fight next too. No, he shouldn't get a bigger fight, but he should still get a big – he should both get, you know – I would like both of them to have a top five opponent next in the ideal world. In a perfect world, they both fight a top five next because those guys – That was amazing. Shout out to both of those guys. That fight was awesome.
Yeah, Brandon Moreno is ranked number 5, and Kai Kara France, he was number 6 at the time of the fight. He moved down to number 8, so they're both top 10 flyweights.
Yeah, sorry to cut you up. I just, when you mentioned it, I had to jump on it before I forgot, because I almost did forget. You know, we're about halfway through the show, and I really did almost completely forget to mention that fight, and that was my favorite one of the night. So, but yeah, let's jump into Nunes versus Durandamé, the first title fight out of the trilogy of title fights that we saw, you know, to cap off the UFC's 2019. Now, I want to ask you this question. Nunes won the fight by unanimous decision, which I think literally everybody watching it should have expected that. You know, really at no point in the fight was Durandamé really, you know, in control of the fight. I feel like, what do you say?
She was never a threat to Amanda Nunes in that fight, never.
Yeah, right. She was really never got much of anything going in that fight, if anything going at all. And Nunes dominated the fight, but on the mat, though. And we don't always see Nunes take the fight to the ground. And now this leads up to the question that I've been waiting to ask you is, now, one thing is that a fan might say, and I pondered this myself, but I mean, MMA math is not always right. But if you look at, like, both of those two fighters fought Holly Holm, it took Durandamé 5 rounds and she didn't finish Holly Holm. She went to a decision. When Nunes fought Holly Holm, she knocked her out, I want to say, in the first or second round, and using her own signature move. Nunes has been Holm has been known for head kick knockouts in the UFC since she came to the UFC. And she has 2 highlight reel head kick knockouts, at least, that I can think of right now. Nunes knocked her out with her own head kick, right? So I'm just pointing out that is something to note, that Nunes is, you know, arguably a much more dangerous fighter on the feet, at least in my opinion. Now, why do you think Nunes, did you agree with her game plan to take the fight to the ground? And why do you think that she would have done that?
Well, I think when you was watching the fight, you would have listened to her corner. Her corner actually said that her striking game wasn't working. So they told her to become a grappler and to wrestle Jermaine Durandamé. And they did that because Jermaine could never defend a takedown. And once she got taken down, she could never get up. So, you know, Nunez's corner was very smart in their approach, because basically her stand-up game wasn't there for her that night. I thought that Jermaine Durandamé would have a better chance if she made the fight ugly on the feet. But Lord, she looked overmatched. She's definitely a one-trick pony. That was definitely exposed in that fight against Nunez. To be honest, was it a good fight? No. Was it a good performance by Nunez? No. Did she do what she had to do to win? Yes. I thought she was getting the takedowns, but was she really advancing her position? Was she really trying to do damage to Jermaine Durandamé when she had her down? No. So, it wasn't Amanda's greatest performance, but it definitely exposed Jermaine Durandamé as a one-trick pony that if you get her to the ground, that her chances of winning drops dramatically, because she doesn't seem to be able to defend takedowns, and she doesn't seem to know how to scramble and get back to her feet. And Nunez did what a champion is supposed to do. You exploit the weakness of your opponent, and you make it your strength. And she did that.
Now, my final question on this fight for you is, who do you think Nunes should fight next? Because I'm assuming that we're not going to see her defend her 145 title, because the UFC, to my knowledge, still doesn't have really anybody for her to fight. I mean, unless she were to fight Megan Anderson, but that's yet to be seen. I'm assuming she's just going to keep fighting 135. Now, do you think she'll defend her title 135? If so, who do you think she would fight next?
Actually, she did an interview, and it was on ESPN, that she says when she comes back after her little break that she's going to fight at 145. So if I had to guess, the UFC would probably – let me look at the rankings. I think they would probably put Megan in there. But you never know. Let me see what the rankings look like real quick. Wow. They don't even have the featherweight rankings. So I guess you will have to go with – I guess you will probably have to go with Megan Anderson.
I knew that was going to happen. When you said you were looking up the rankings, I was like, he doesn't know. There's no rankings. Man, I just let it happen.
Yeah. But I think a wild card might be the young lady that just fought Cyborg. The young lady that fought Cyborg. She was very game. Yeah, she was very, very game. And she did some things in that fight that I thought she probably could use against Nunes, as far as her pace, her slick striking. So maybe she gets the next shot at 145, but I don't think that's a sexy enough fight. So I think they will probably go with Megan Anderson. But I just think the 145 division isn't as deep. So I see that division maybe folding. I think maybe they'll let her defend the belt maybe once or maybe twice, and then they'll just fold that division because there isn't really any fighters in that division. Because they created that division just for Cyborg.
And now Cyborg's fighting for the Bellator title, like I had predicted on our show a long time ago, that they would eventually get picked up by Bellator and they'd have her fight Julia Butt for the featherweight Bellator title. So, of course.
Yeah.
But
sorry about that. So the next one is Holloway. So I don't know where he ranks on your list, but Holloway is like one of my favorite fighters to watch. And that was, you know, really, I wasn't bothered that he lost his title. I didn't really think he looked good in the fight. I mean, some people were telling me they thought he won. My friend thought was like shocked that he lost the fight. I really wasn't shocked. I figured that he was going to lose the decision because he really didn't land enough volume, you know, the way Volkanovski did. If, you know, when they put up the significant strikes, you know, Holloway got outlanded all five rounds. So, and it was really just a stand-up fight. There wasn't any takedowns, and Volkanovski didn't try to wrestle or anything like that. So you really didn't have any other factor to base the fight on, in my opinion. And I don't know, Holloway didn't look that good to me. What did you think about it?
I think I may have said this on the last show. I think when you won so many fights in a row and you basically become dominant in a weight class, that sometimes you feel that you don't have to work on anything in your game. And that fight, Volkanovski chewed up his legs. Max did not defend the leg kicks the whole fight, and that was his undoing. You have to defend the leg kicks, bro, especially if you are a stand-up fighter, which Max Holloway is. Volkanovski had a very good game plan. I did think Max won at least one round, two, if you're being generous, but he didn't look good. He didn't press the pace like he normally does. He let He let Volkanovski dictate the pace of the fight, and he basically was a counterpuncher that whole fight, and that's not Max Holloway's game. Max Holloway is only pushing the pace, establishing the jab, hitting you with two or three, maybe four punch combos, and he wasn't able to do that. And I don't know, man. Maybe having all these fought in the last year and a half, 2 years, maybe that's weighing on his body. So I think he needs to, you know, maybe take some time off, maybe let Volkanovski defend the belt against somebody else, and then come back and get his title shot. And then I think he may have to take a long look at his camp and maybe bring in some other trainers to shore up some parts of his game. And I'm going to ask you this question because me and you both like Max Holloway. Do you think if he was to implement at least some grappling in his game, do you think how do you think that would affect his fighting? I mean, you know, how that would affect his overall game?
Well, I mean, the last time I checked, and I know this isn't necessarily an answer to your question, but I know the last time I checked, I want to say he was like a purple belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, so I know he does practice it, you know, at least a little bit. You know, I think he could work on that and to sharpen his skills on the mat. And then and then like you said, with his grappling, yeah, I do think it would help him a lot because, you know, he would take on a lot less damage. You know, you can avoid taking leg kicks. You can avoid, you know, taking strikes to the head, which we know he absorbs a lot of strikes to the head because he's always, you know, standing in front of his opponent. You never see him go to the ground or, I mean, he also never gets taken to the ground because he has good takedown defense. So, you know, we never really see him on the ground at all in his fights. And, you know, I think, yeah, he could benefit a lot from working on that aspect of his game. And I would like to see him take a good amount of time off. You know, I don't want to see him come back and, you know, when I was watching his post-fight press conference, you know, the media asked him, oh, like, what about, you know, what would be next or what about a rematch? And then he answered, you know, let me sit down and talk to Dana White and we'll see, you know, basically what the UFC wants to do and then we'll go from there. You know, they even asked him about fights at lightweight and stuff like that. And really, you know, based on the way he responded, it seems like, you know, there may be another fight for him. And, you know, Dana White even mentioned like a rematch in Australia. It could be possible. And I just hope he doesn't fight for a while. I like to see him take like at least 3 months off, ideally like 6 months off, maybe even a little longer and not fight till like, you know, at least like summer 2020, at least take till like summer 2020. And then, or maybe get, you know, get a fight camp going like around like April, May, and then, you know, fight during summer 2020 or around that time. Because you really think about it, like, he fought four title fights in a year.
Yep.
He's the most active UFC champion by far. I mean, Amanda Nunes is probably right behind him, but and then probably Shevchenko is right there too, because they both been fighting a lot. But Holloway, look at the guys he fought. I mean, he fought Ortega in December 2018. Then he turned right around and basically got right back into a fight camp. He fought for the interim lightweight title, Dustin Poirier, and I want to say that was April. Might have been May. I want to say it was April.
right? So that's a real quick turnaround. Then another instant turnaround. He might have took him. He probably didn't even take any time off. He went right into another camp. He defended his featherweight title against Frankie Edgar. I want to say that was in July. So that's 3 months later. And then again, he basically, you know, he might have took some time off, but then got into another camp, and he fights Volkanovski in December of 2019. That's four title fights in a year's time. Now, not many champions lately can say that they have fought in four title fights in 1 year's time. Now, we had talked about this, like, earlier this year, and I want to say it was right after UFC 236 when Max lost, you know, for the first time in a handful of years when he lost to Dustin Poirier for the lightweight title. You know, we were saying, oh, what do you think Max should do? Like, he should take some time off or whatever. And I think we both had said that it would be, you know, he was really going really fast and that he was taking on a lot of fights and taking a lot of damage. Even though he was winning fights, you know, you're still absorbing a lot of shots and a lot of damage to your body. And we were just, you know, kind of highlighting the fact that he never really gives himself, you know, the proper time to let his body heal. You know what I mean? And he always just goes back into another fight, which as us as fans, we like that. And being, you know, that, and I'm a big fan of him, I like that, of course, but I know that it's harmful to his body and he's not letting himself, you know, get the proper amount of time he needs to, you know, before he gets back in there. And we basically said he should take some time off and not fight to take off the rest of 2019. But then he ended up signing to fight Edgar right after that. He fought Edgar. I think we might have talked about it again after that, said, okay, maybe he takes off the rest of the year and fights early 2020. Then he signs to fight Volkanovski. So, you know, honestly, I can't say I'm surprised that he lost. You know, I had a bad feeling going into this fight that he might lose because of how many fights he's been taking. And that's exactly my stance on it. I'm not surprised he lost because of the amount of fights he's been taking, the amount of strikes he's taken to the head. You know, he doesn't allow himself like the time to heal afterwards. And I'd really like to see him take off, like, you know, ideally like 6 months or more. I'd like to see him not come back until like at least summer 2020, in my opinion, honest opinion. And I love watching him fight.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. You know, remember that was one of the things I as a Cowboy Cerrone fan, you know, I like when he lets his body rest because he looks better in the fights when he let his body rest instead of trying to go out there and fight at every pay-per-view or, you know, lose a fight and then try to, you know, jump on a fight night, you know, stuff like that. And it does wear on your body. And then we can't forget that, remember, he struggled to make 155 when he was supposed to fight Khabib that one time. And then he had some mental issues stuff going on too. So it's been a long year for Max, man. And I know you said 3 months, maybe 6 months. I'm with you on the 6 months. I think he should take off and maybe fight towards July, maybe August time frame. I don't see a real reason to rush him back into the octagon. I know they probably going to try to get him on this Australia card with Adesanya, but I just don't think that's a good move. Let Volkanovski fight somebody else, and then you see him towards the end of the summer. That'll give him time enough to get his body together, you know, let his body heal, you know, spend some time with his family, you know, get his mind back right, maybe add a couple more tricks to his game. And, you know, I think as fans of Holloway, we want to see him come back bigger and better and put on better performances. Like we're accustomed to seeing.
You know, we really love watching you fight, Max Holloway, but we want to see you, you know, really rest and take the proper time that you really haven't had in a while. And then, you know, definitely, you know, you'll see you come back stronger, you know, late summer 2020. You know, that'd be the most ideal situation for that. So the Blessed Express can keep on rolling. It just needs a good night's rest, good couple months rest at least. So, you know, now we definitely got to get into the main event. Kamaru Usman finishes Colby Covington in the fifth round. I want to say it was a TKO, but maybe they just ruled it a knockout. Either way, he knocked him out in the fifth round, and it was a pretty exciting fight and definitely different than what I predicted. I had predicted that it would be more of a wrestling fight, but they really just stand and bang the whole fight. I don't even remember any takedown attempts from either one of them. And, you know, I just want to say that where I predicted it would be a majority draw, I do think that if Usman didn't finish Covington in the fifth round, that very well could have been a majority draw. Just want to point that out. And you thought I was crazy when I said it'd be a majority draw. It wasn't the way it wasn't the style of fight that I said that it would be, but the majority draw was possible. Because I do think it was a close fight.
It was in play. But, you know, I was shocked by that fight too, man. I don't remember any takedowns. I remember a couple of feints. But they stood in front of each other for five rounds, man. And I picked Covington to win the fight because I just thought his pace, Usman couldn't keep up with his pace. And I thought Usman had lost the mental warfare because he really didn't say anything. But I also said that it could be the calm before the storm. Maybe he's just letting it all build up and will unleash in the cage. And lo and behold, that's what happened. A lot of people saying that it was a premature stoppage. No, it wasn't. Colby was just doing what most fighters do when they're hurt. He covered up his head, and he was hoping to survive, and the ref didn't let him. But I do have to take my hats off to Colby. He got his jaw broke, and he continued to fight, and he stood in there. That's a tough dude, man.
Agree with that.
Yeah, whether you like him or not, you can't take that away from him, man. Most guys or ladies probably would have checked out of that fight due to the broken jaw, but he hung in there, and hey, that's a tough guy. And I definitely got to get my hats off. I definitely got to get Usman props because I didn't see him fighting that type of fight for five rounds. And he matched Kobe's pace, but Kobe, you know, he hit him sometimes, but you could tell when Usman hit him. It seemed like it would be sweat flying across the octagon, or Kobe was always taking a step back. So it was definitely a good fight. And on with you, if the ref doesn't stop it, I think a majority draw was definitely in play, and I wouldn't have been surprised if it happened.
Man, I'm telling you, the majority draw, man. I'm telling you, you thought it was crazy. You laughed. I had a feeling, man, it could have been a majority draw because, you know, it was such a evenly matched fight, you know, on a lot of scales, you know, both really high-level wrestlers that I didn't expect it to be a that kind of fight, but majority draw, I'm telling you, don't sleep on the majority draws, bro. There's a lot of evenly matched fights the UFC been making lately, a lot of close fights. So, I mean, I really could have even believed that if, you know, they give Moraes a split decision, I could have even believed that that was a majority draw. Because, you know, a lot of people said round two, you know, could have gone either way, and round one, maybe Moraes, round three. You know, I thought Aldo was taking over the fight in round three, so you know, that one I couldn't even believe it. But either way, you know, I definitely want to ask you about Frankie. So let's jump into Frankie. I mean, overall, UFC 245 was an amazing event, and I was very I was very pleased with that night of fights. So definitely props to the UFC for putting together an incredible card. UFC 245 is definitely an event that we'll remember. You know, a lot of classics, a lot of classic fights there, a lot of fights that we'll remember for a long time. So, and also, yeah, shout out to Covington as well for fighting with a broken jaw, because we've seen fighters, you know, bow out of fights with lesser injuries. You know, we've seen guys like Anthony Pettis, you know, leave fights with like broken hands and stuff like that. So, that definitely shout out to Covington. He can't deny he's a warrior for that. So really can't deny that. Definitely has heart. But yeah, let me ask you about Frankie Edgar's fight, and you know, the UFC, you know, going into 2020. Frankie's fight is this week, but you know, I just want to point this out too. UFC going into 2020, the first big pay-per-view of 2020, they're gonna have raised the pay-per-view cost back. You know, they had, when the ESPN deal started, they had moved it down from $64.99 to $59.99. You know, I think they tried to do that to like offset the subscription cost or something like that, which really didn't change much because you were already paying the monthly subscription and then you had to buy the pay-per-view anyway. So I really didn't understand that when they first made that change in the first place, how that was really effective. But now they moved it back up to $64.99, and that's going to start with McGregor versus Cowboy pay-per-view in January. So what do you think about that?
When I heard this news, I wanted so bad to blame the UFC and their overhyping of Conor McGregor coming back. But I can't. I think this was always the plan. I think the plan was to sucker everybody in with the ESPN Plus year membership and the discounted price of the pay-per-views. I think that was just to draw everybody in. And then, you know, normally around when the new year comes around, normally most prices are changed, and the ESPN and the UFC, you know, they're just following the tendencies of everything else. I don't think an extra $5 is going to hurt. But at the same time, let's look at this Conor card. They want to charge $65 for this card, and it's probably going to be one of the weakest cards of the year. Even the main card isn't that strong. I mean, yeah, you got Cowboy and Conor, but then you got Holly Holm and somebody else. This card really isn't pay-per-view worthy, and I think you're going to have a lot of complaints about this card.
Yeah, so I don't really know how I feel about the change. I mean, to me, it's a really small change. I don't really – I mean, it's a thing that, like, gets – you know, it makes big headlines. I really don't know, like – you know, it really doesn't do much for me. I mean, I guess I didn't even think about that, I guess, when I saw it about, you know, the irony of it beginning with McGregor Cowboy. I didn't even make that connection. I don't know. Maybe I don't know. I really don't have much of a thought on it. It really doesn't. You know, like I said, I didn't think that them moving the price down $5 to offset the monthly subscription of ESPN Plus really was an effective move in the first place. I mean, and then there's really no reason why they even, I don't think it's effective to move it back up either, because, you know, they were just asking Dana White the other day, like, how has ESPN changed the UFC? Like, how has business been better since the ESPN? And I want to say Dana White said that their sales overall, I want to say he said sales are up about 46% since they've began the ESPN deal, which is a huge improvement. So I don't even understand why they would feel the need to raise the pay-per-view costs when they've already increased
you know, ESPN has helped them a lot already, and then they've already increased sales a huge amount. So I really don't understand why they would need to tack on $5. I don't see how that. But yeah, I don't know. I'm stumped on that one. I think we should just talk about the Frankie fight. And I want to ask you because, you know, Frankie Edgar was supposed to fight Corey Sandhagen. He was going to go down to 135. And, you know, him and Aldo kind of both came out that they were getting fights at 135 kind of at the same time. It was interesting, you know, how that played out. But anyways, he was supposed to fight Corey Sandhagen. I think he still is fighting Corey Sandhagen, but he's now going to fight. You know, Korean Zombie was supposed to fight Ortega. Ortega fell out, so then now he steps in to fight, and that's going down in the main event this weekend. So I'm just wanting to know what you think about him fighting Korean Zombie, somebody who has looked very good lately on short notice.
First, hats off to Frankie for taking the fight after Brian T-City Ortega dropped out. You know, I was very shocked that Frankie took the fight, being that, you know, his next adventure is at 135. So I was very shocked that he would take the fight. But I see why the UFC would call him, being that, you know, being that there, that he's fighting the Korean Zombie over in Southeast Asia, that, you know, they want to establish a name to fight him. And Frankie is an established name. But the UFC needs to be weary, because every time you put Frankie in there against somebody that you proclaim to be the next upcoming, Frankie ends up destroying them. And I don't know whether or not he's going to destroy the Korean Zombie, but I know the Korean Zombie is going to have a hell of a fight on his hands, and I hope he's working on his cardio, because as we know, Frankie fights at a hellacious pace. I mean, between Frankie, Clay Guida, Demetrius Johnson, so those guys fight at a high pace. So I like Frankie to win this fight, and I think if he wins this fight, and depending on how much damage he takes, that he may stay in the Corey Sandhagen fight. But if he takes some damage in this fight, I don't see him making the Sandhagen fight. And I feel sorry for my man Corey Sandhagen, because that's another fight that would definitely put him on the map. Even though he's already beat a Sun Sal and John Lineker. So, but I hope he does get a chance to fight for
him. And it took him a while, you know, it took him a while to get the Lineker fight too, because they tried to get that one together, and I'm pretty sure that one fell through once or twice too before they finally actually fought.
Yeah, it fell through Lineker. Once.
Yeah, so that one, it just seemed, I don't know, it seems like Sandhagen, every time, you know, he has these, you know, he gets these big looks, you know, it seems like there's like complications with him getting that, you know, opportunity, you know, on fight night. So, yeah, I don't know. We'll see what happens with Frankie. I mean, it's when you're fighting the Korean Zombie, I expect Frankie to take a lot of damage. I mean, I hope that honestly, and even though I'd want to see, you know, even though I want to see Korean Zombie because I like him as a striker, I think the best route for Frankie in this fight is not to stand and bang and to use his wrestling and take him down and dominate him on the mat, land strikes to the body, and really try to, you know, save up his energy. Don't try to go in there and have a war, because you know, I think Korean Zombie will be expecting a war, and, you know, he'll expect him to just stand in front of him and throw big shots. And I don't want to see Frankie do that, especially if he wants to fight, wants to be able to fight Corey Sandhagen, you know, shortly after that. I don't think that standing and banging is the route to go with Korean Zombie.
Yeah, I think Frankie would use the same game plan he used against Yair Rodriguez when they first fought. Remember, he would stand up with him, shoot, take him down, beat him up on the mat, and he just smothered Yair on the mat. And I think that would probably be the game plan he uses against Yair Rodriguez. And I think that should be the same game plan he used against Corey Sandhagen. Because Corey Sandhagen has some real slick hands, man. He reminds me of a Roy Jones in the octagon. So I wouldn't be surprised if he incorporates that game plan again. And I definitely want to see if Kareem Zombie can keep up with his pace. Because Frankie has a crazy pace, bro. A crazy pace.
Absolutely. So, you know, we'll have to see what happens with that one this weekend. You know, that's a fight where there's a lot of variables. And you know, if this happens, this might happen. Or, you know, if this doesn't happen, it could go this way. It's one of those fights. So, you know, both guys definitely have their strong, you know, strong areas. But, you know, I do think that Frankie has more ways to beat Korean Zombie than the Korean Zombie has ways to beat him. And I think that's one thing to note when you're, if you're going to look at, like, you know, things like a tail of the tape of the fight and talk about, you know, attributes and really break down the fight. One thing is to just say that Edgar has more routes to victory than Korean Zombie does. If Zombie wants to win, he pretty much has to win with his hands. You know, he has to win by a knockout or a decision. But winning a decision versus Frankie Edgar, you have to be able – I mean, we saw last time how Zombie kind of faded, you know, in the later rounds versus who was it that he fought? Yair Rodriguez, you know, he kind of was fading in the later rounds, and then you could see that, you know, he probably was ahead on the cards, but, you know, he definitely was just kind of hanging on, you know, in the last 10 minutes of that Yair fight. So probably doesn't want to try to go for a, you know, a 5-round decision versus Frankie Edgar. I don't think he'll make it. So he really has to get a knockout. But Edgar can finish him on the mat. You know, he could do a lot of different things. So that's one point to make about that.
Yeah, I was at the Yair Rodriguez fight and Korean Zombie fight. That was a hell of a fight, and that atmosphere was electric inside the Pepsi Center. This is a hard fight to pick because both guys are so good. But I'm going to go with my man Frankie, man. It's hard to pick against him. I think Frankie wins. I don't know what now to be unanimous because of where the fight is being held at. I'd say he won a split decision, but I wouldn't be surprised if he got screwed on the scorecards either. So, but I'm going to go with Frankie winning the fight.
Okay. Yeah. I'm gonna roll with Frankie too because I just feel like he has more weapons than Zombie and also has a better gas tank. So I feel like he has more routes to victory, like I said, and we'll just have to wait and see what happens on Saturday. That pretty much wraps up everything that I wanted to talk about for the show. I mean, there was one other thing that I had seen last minute that I thought about asking you about, but then I thought maybe we already went over time, maybe not. Maybe just real quick, did you see the news that Rory McDonald has signed with PFL?
Yes, we talked about this today on the group chat on Slack, and my opinion is right now in mixed martial arts game, basically the UFC is king. Bellator is next with one championship and rising right there. And then you have LFA and PFL. I look at PFL and LFA as developmental leagues per se. And I don't understand why Rory would go from the big time, big leagues, the UFC, down to the minor leagues, Bellator, to even a minor league, to AAA, I would say, to PFL. To me, that makes no sense. Yeah, to me, that makes no sense, man. It's like it seems like he's going backwards in his career instead of going forwards. So maybe he's looking to be a champion Bellator, then a champion PFL, then maybe try to come back to the UFC to be champ. Or maybe once he leaves PFL, he'll go to LFA. So who knows? But, you know, we wish him the best. I don't understand the move. What's your thoughts on it? Maybe you can enlighten me.
Man, so as you can see, Lee is definitely excited about Rory McDonald going to the PFL. Everybody, he's very thrilled to see that this kind of career move for the Red King. And you know, honestly, I don't know. And I was hoping you were going to be able to explain it to me. So you asking me to explain it to you? I'm kind of lost for words at that point. But I mean, I guess just kind of going out on a limb, I would just say, you know, maybe, you know, either A, there's like certain opponents that he, you know, wants to have on his resume that are currently fighting in PFL. You know, I could see that maybe being a reason why he would go there, not so much thinking of it as like what's the biggest like stage to be on. So maybe that's one way. And then another thing, you know, I thought of was maybe he's, you know, he's just looking for a different kind of competition and a different kind of challenge, not saying the level of competition, but like the format of the fight, you know, maybe, you know, 'cause I know he was getting, you know, his mind state has really changed on fighting, you know, as where he's gotten more into religion. And he's, you know, I know he had like a post-fight interview where he was saying that he didn't really have the same passion for fighting.
Sure,
you know, that he did. Yeah. So he really didn't have the same thoughts on fighting as he, you know, did before. And maybe now he just doesn't have the drive to just fight, you know, in these, you know, UFC and Bellator divisions. You know, PFL kind of presents a different style of a contest where it's, you know, you're still fighting MMA, but you kind of have a different concept of what you're fighting for. It's, you know, how they have, it's how they're point based, and you know, you kind of get, you know, you kind of, it's almost like how the NHL is. Now, I usually say it, I know you know this, but I'm saying like for the listeners, maybe he's just going for that kind. He's going for, you know, the structure of what PFL is. And that entices him more to fight within that kind of organization that has that kind of structure where it's a point-based system. It's kind of like the NHL of MMA, where you're kind of, your team is, or your team or your fighter is trying to win on, get to points to make the playoffs, you know, where, or you don't get enough points, you don't make the playoffs to fight for a title. So maybe he just needs something like that to drive him. Maybe that intrigues him. That's the other thought that I had, but I, you know, I could be wrong.
I mean, I know PFL, they had a $1 million that they award to the winner of their tournament. You know, I know they award that. Maybe that's his new challenge, to be the tournament winner or whatever. But I just look at it as if he's going in reverse pattern in his career, man. I just don't understand it. Maybe it's like you said, maybe he's looking for a different challenge, and maybe tournament fighting style is maybe better suited for him. But I just don't understand it. And, you know, we wish Rory all the luck in the world. Hopefully we'll get to see him back in the UFC octagon before his career is over. And shout-outs to Rory, man.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, absolutely. Shout-out to Rory McDonald. You know, I hope he finds, you know, some, you know, what drives him to keep fighting. You know, if he doesn't have the same, you know, if he doesn't enjoy fighting as much, then and do what you have to do to, you know, make it worth your while. You know, I don't think, you know, every fighter in this business is out there trying to make money, you know, because, you know, we know that a lot of fighters that we see fight often really don't make that much money in MMA. So at the end of the day, I don't think a lot of fighters make enough money to drive them to, you know, for that to be their main source of motivation. You know, they have to, you know, they say for you to really have longevity doing something, like, you really have to love it and have a passion for it, because there's a lot of hard days. You know, when you fight, I know Roy McDonald's a champion, but once you're not a champion anymore, you're really not making, you know, the same type of fight purses as when you are a champion. So, like you said, maybe that motivates him. You know, the tournament style, the million dollar check at the end. So, you know, I hope the best for him. I hope he finds, you know, what gives him that passion.
Yeah, me too.
So yeah, they know that pretty much. You know, we hit so many good points tonight. I'm glad we got to get to everything that we wanted to get to. And, you know, thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you all. You know, thank you to those who listen, you know, on a regular basis. Definitely appreciate that. And, that's all I got. You know, until next time, Lee, the floor is yours.
Yeah. You said it was episode 121?
121.
Hey, that's my birthday, man, January 21st. So shout out
to me. Wow.
You know, episode 121. But at the same time, you know, thanks for listening, everybody. Me and Keys, we didn't do one last year, but we will do one this year coming up. We will do a UFC 2019 in review show, probably the first week or second week of January. We are going to do that this year, Keys. I'm just letting you know. Because I think that's always fun. It gives us time to reflect on the past year.
I could have thought we did do it last
more.
Year.
I remember doing it. No, okay. We said we was going to do it, but we didn't do it. I remember because I had wrote down, like, the stuff that I thought we would talk about, and I know we never did the show because actually it's still in my notepad, and I didn't even make any mark throughs or anything. So, yeah. But, yeah, we're going to do that this year. But, Keys, you need to get on the Slack and vote for your year-end awards. That was actually pretty funny that you missed that. But thanks, everybody, for listening. Happy holidays. Season's greetings. Be safe. Enjoy your family. If you're going to drink responsibly. To my man, Keys, happy holidays to you and your family, bro. I know next week we might. I don't think we're going to have a show next week due to Christmas. But if we do, just stay tuned. Live, love, laugh. Live your life to the fullest. Tell somebody you love them. And have one good laugh every day. Lee and Keys signing out.